Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York invites you to be the informed patient with the podcast that features experts from Central New York's only academic medical center. I'm your host, Amber Smith. New research is showing how exercise can protect our brains from Alzheimer's disease, and we'll hear more about this from my guest, Dr. Nathan Tucker. He's a geneticist and molecular biologist and associate professor of pharmacology at Upstate. Welcome to The Informed Patient, Dr. Tucker.
Thank you for having me, Amber.
Previous studies have demonstrated that physical activity may help lower the risk of Alzheimer's disease or slow its progression. But I understand your work took this a step further. You were looking at how this exercise protects the brain on a cellular level. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. So like you said, it's pretty clear now that physical activity can benefit all individuals, and especially those at Alzheimer's risk or during progression of Alzheimer's. But we wanted to get into, a little higher resolution of how this exercise can protect individuals and improve outcomes. So to do that, we used a series of, pretty high-tech ways to analyze what cells are doing, how they're deciding to do these things, and did it both in the context of exercise and sedentary and in Alzheimer's disease model mouse and those that are controls.
Can you describe for us the study that you were involved in, which was published in the journal Nature Neuroscience? How was
sure.
that done?
We used an approach called single nucleus RNA sequencing, which maybe we'll go into in a little more depth in a minute. But basically, we isolated the hippocampal region from a series of mice, the Alzheimer's model mouse, and then those that we came controls. And each one was separated into two groups, one that was an exercise model, so access to free wheel running, and the others that were sedentary without that running. From that, we isolate all the individual cells, ended up being about 500,000 cells from all of these mice, and start to look at how the exercise was actually acting upon those individual cell types to protect them.
Now, you said hippocampus. Is that somewhere in the brain?
Yeah, so that's a structure very deep inside of your brain. And we focus particularly on the dentate gyrus of the hippocampus. It's kind of the birthplace of a lot of new neurons. So that's the place where, all the things that are giving new memories or allowing you to have spatial recognition, it's where all those neurons are born. So it's a particularly important place for to protect.
Now, in the lab, how do you replicate exercise?
Yeah, so in this case, we used a technique that's widely used in mouse research, which is, no different than those that would have rodents at home, that you give them a little wheel that they'll happily hop on and exercise. So by providing that to animals in the laboratory, they're able to gain a bunch of exercise as well and gain all the benefits of exercise that we can compare to those that don't have it.
How do you know the findings in laboratory mice are going to reflect what happens in the human brain?
I think you're getting at a really central question of not only this research, but all research. And the answer is we don't know, right? But I think there's no real good models of exercising, neural stem cells in a dish, right? I can't grow a bunch of cells there, nor can I analyze these things in humans, right? That would be unethical. So in this case, using something like a mouse or, in other cases, a rat, which is another important model in this area, can give us certain insights or clues into what's happening in them. And honestly, we share a lot with mice, but there's no guarantee that it's a one-to-one transfer across. But at least we can hone in on certain things that'll help us refine what we would investigate either in a dish or in humans as well.
Yeah, you used the phrase, I think, was single nuclei RNA sequencing. Can you help us understand what that is?
Sure. So I think in the past, for most of my career, we would study things at the tissue level. So this particular study's in neuroscience. A lot of the work that I do is in cardiology. So you would have you know, a region of the brain that you would pool and analyze.
The
reality of that is that tissue, you know, the brain or the heart, is comprised of many different specialized cell types that all need to work together. The consequence of doing things in bulk, as we say, or at the tissue level, is you'll lose a lot of the resolution that you need to understand what these other and often critical cell types are actually doing. So what single nucleus RNA sequencing does is instead of doing it at a tissue level, I break it down to each individual cell or nucleus in this case, you know, the command center of the cell that's making a lot of new transcripts, and then process them individually. What we do is a kind of fancy molecular barcoding trick that allows us to read out what came from where later. But the end result is that I can then, instead of looking at the tissue, I can look at what were neurons doing, what were neuronal stem cells doing, immature neurons, microglia, all in isolation. And the findings from this, you know, highlight some unique responses that different cell types will do.
This is Upstate's The Informed Patient podcast. I'm your host, Amber Smith. I'm talking with Dr. Nathan Tucker from Upstate's Department of Pharmacology about his work on how physical activity helps the brain guard against Alzheimer's disease. So you set out to analyze how each type of cell was going to be affected by exercise.
That's exactly so. I mean, we went in, you know, understanding a bit of what we wanted to look for, you know, particularly the neuronal stem cell niche up through immature neurons to mature neurons. But the advantage of this type of study that is it's global. So while we might focus on those particular cell types, we also capture all this other interesting information as well.
Previously, I've talked with Alzheimer's researchers about plaques and tangles, these abnormal structures that may form in the brain and contribute to cognitive decline. Did your study examine if exercise had any effect on those?
No, we didn't. We didn't look at the plaques or tau tangles themselves in this study. This is a pretty standard model. We knew how things were going to progress. And this really wasn't a study saying about regression of plaques or anything like that. Although I would say we did measure different behavioral measures to say that, you know, the brains are functioning better in the context of exercise in this model. But for a direct relationship to a plaque burden or tau tangle burden, we did not directly address it in the study.
Can you describe how the nerve cells were affected?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we saw a bit of a particular influence, again, on those neuronal precursors. And I think the way that we wanted to compare them is there's a clear negative impact on these cells, both molecularly and, you know, phenotypically through previous measures inside of this Alzheimer's model. And what we then do is along that other axis is say, how does exercise end up reverting these cells back to what we would consider normal? And, you know, I can't really pinpoint it down to one or two genes, although we tested a couple in cellular models that seem to protect neurons pretty efficiently. But we get this whole suite of genes that really open things up for further investigation for neuronal protection.
Did exercise have any effect on the glial cells that support and protect the neurons?
Yeah, so it had an impact on microglia, certainly. So it ends up shifting them away from what's this really pro-inflammatory state that you see in sedentary Alzheimer's, you know, the APP mice that we were studying, and ends up being a more balanced profile. So again, reverting back to what you'd see in our normal mice.
Does your work now become a resource for other researchers who are working on Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. So this is, I think at least this point, the largest investigation at this single cell kind of level in this control model. And, you know, coming from my own past, which was going gene by gene in individual models, picking the right thing to work on is a critical choice. And was a little bit what guided me down doing this kind of single nucleus approach where we're agnostic to what we want to look for specifically. So hopefully all these other researchers, you know, not only in my lab or my collaborator's lab, Dr. Christian Ran at MGH, that our people will pick the hopefully more correct thing to work on to be protected, but also groups, you know, really around the world that can not only access these data, the raw data are publicly posted for everybody to have a look at, reach out to us about particular nuances of it, and then hopefully guide all these really talented researchers around the world to focus their efforts on things that might be protective in the context of exercise.
Well, when you think about what could happen from your findings, could this lead us to new therapies, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. So this study was a bit of a proof of concept for us too. You know, this approach to the single nucleus sequencing style approach is pretty young. You know, I think our analysis side is still rapidly advancing. So this was our first attempt to say, let's do this in the context of exercise and really looking at an endpoint style study here. And I think there's some really neat things that'll be worth following up on. But there's this whole other future road too that I think will perhaps even better guide therapeutic approaches, which is there's a dynamic phase, you know, where all this remodeling is happening in the context of exercise. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to sample some of that and look at the trajectories of how things are happening and maybe find even more important genes or molecules that are going to guide that next therapeutic study.
Well, it's exciting to know this work is taking place right here in Syracuse. So thank you so much for making time to tell us about it.
We're glad to do our work here in Central New York. It's the place where I was born and raised, and I'm happy to have a laboratory here. So we thank you for your support. Look forward to speaking with you again about future work.
My guest has been Dr. Nathan Tucker, who's an associate professor of pharmacology at Upstate. The Informed Patient is a podcast covering health, science, and medicine, brought to you by Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York, and produced by Jim Howe, with sound engineering by Bill Brokel and graphic design by Dan Cameron. Find our archive of previous episodes at upstate.edu/informed. If you enjoyed this episode, please invite a friend to listen. You can also rate and review the Informed Patient podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you tune in. This is your host, Amber Smith, thanking you for listening.